So we're at the spot at Yorkgate Mall with Ms. Gay McDougall. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm doing well.
And you're a representative for United Nations. Can you explain to our viewers a little bit about your role?
Sure. I'm the United Nations independent expert on minorities. And one of my tasks is to go to countries around the world, like Canada. I'm here for this purpose, to look at how minority populations are faring in their homes and how the government policies and laws are impacting on them. And I write a report and I report back to the United Nations about what I found.
So Canada's a big country. Why are you here in Jane and Finch? We did a community tour and an earlier leadership roundtable discussion. Why Jane and Finch?
Well, I think that this is a neighborhood that represents the diversity of this province, of this city, of this province, and of this country. And in that, it is a very important ground zero, if you will, for measuring how well the government is or is not doing in creating the kind of lifestyles for minorities that it pledges to do on the federal and international levels. So this is a test of what is real on the ground.
So from your discussions, what really took you aback?
Well, I was taken aback really at the degree of poverty among minorities and the sort of sense of hopelessness that a lot of people have, especially youth, about their futures. You know, a lot of people are immigrants to this country, and they come in seeing themselves as making a better life and making a better life for their children. And as I sat here in the spot, I heard stories from young people that didn't quite say that, didn't quite say that they're feeling that their lives are going to be better. And I think that's very, very problematic.
So although you were taken aback with some issues, what was something that was a highlight to you that really hit home with you?
Well, to me, the highlight is how communities are taking up their problems themselves and whether or not they have the kind of support that they need to do that well, they're doing it and they're taking charge. And here I've seen young people taking charge of their lives and trying to help their fellow young people mend their broken lives and move forward. So that's very impressive, yeah.
So from this visit to Canada, Jane and Finch, where will you take back this information and how would that play out?
Well, first of all, I will go back to Ottawa and say what I've learned here in Jane and Finch and in this greater Toronto area. And from there, I will give a report in Geneva in March. So I will be telling a world community about what I found here.
Okay. So the report that you write, will we be able to access it on the ground level and even post it on janeandfinch.com for everybody to see?
Absolutely. I'm going to make sure you get a copy, an electronic copy that you can post on your website.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. Any powerful words to our viewers?
Well, I think the most powerful thing to remember is that you can take charge of your lives, and you can, with a unity among a lot of you, make your government accountable. And that's the critical thing.
All right. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right. For JadeandFinch.com, this is Butterfly. Peace.
The Canadian government has ignored places like Jane and Finch and, let's say, 13 priority neighborhoods. How do we then go to the United Nations to then advocate, or who do we reach out to then get the support of the United Nations to then make a difference locally? You're here for, an hour or two, and then it's like, oh, it's a dream, right? Is there a contact that we could email you? Is there another person that's like you there that could take on this? And then how would they support us towards asking our government to support grassroots organizations and to get hospitals that could help with gunshot wounds or to help with daycares and on and on and on? Not all at once, but some meaningful steps towards making that difference.
You are absolutely right. that the United Nations is a collection of governments that come together presumably to develop some rules among them and to abide by those rules. It's not always the case that they do either. But one of the sets of rules that they have developed are human rights laws and principles, et cetera, that are quite general on one level. But they agree to let people like myself, and I actually don't work for the United Nations. I do a special sort of volunteer, a job for the U, which is that I go around the countries like this one, and I talk to government and I talk to community-based groups, and I report back on whether or not the country is in fact doing what it says it's doing, and has promised that it will do. Canada has agreed to some specific human rights treaties, and I'm here to see whether or not in fact they are fulfilling their promises. Now, so I guess on one level, I'm the one that you tell your issues to. There's nobody else behind me who's going to be able to be the person that you call. Because what happens at this level is a little more general than funding to your group. I'm going to go back and say that Canada is not doing enough to meet the needs of real people on the ground. That's not going to directly get you your group funding. And I'm going to make some specific suggestions. But the reality is that really, we have to push your government to have the political will to do the detailed stuff. we can only do so much. You've got to do the rest, and it's got to be far more than we can do. There are some things you can do that would pop to mind. You know, there's the political process. And you got to figure it out, and what happens at your level that you could do that would be effective. If you have the possibility of voting, you know, if you are citizens and have the possibility, you absolutely must do that. If your parents are citizens, and you're not eligible to vote yet, You got to make sure. If you're not eligible to vote, you got to support candidates, and you got to push them to do what the community needs to do. There's no substitute on the international level for that kind of on-the-ground political activism. One of the things I'm looking at is how many faces of color can I see on the city council, on the provincial parliament, on the federal parliament, in the government. Mm-hmm. Where are all of you and your, you know, parents in terms of these decision-making bodies? So I'm going to ask that question to the government. And I'm going to say that, you know, as far as I can see, this is a real problem. And I can't tell them specifically what to do, but I could tell them that I'm going to keep saying it's a problem until I see some change.
There were comments about people who were immigrants coming from other countries, racialized people with qualifications who cannot get jobs. Usually when people speak about racialized people, they think about immigrants. Africans, for one, have been in this country since at least 1603. That's not recognized anywhere in the curriculum, number one. A seventh, eighth, ninth generation African Canadian is treated the same way as me, who came from Guyana about 30 years ago. The other thing is access to education. At the University of Toronto, the transitional year program, which was put in place in 1968, when a group of African Caribbean people fought to get that established. On Monday, the university is starting a process to dismantle this program. This program is for people who have dropped out of school, who are at least 21 years old and want to continue and get a university education. The University of Toronto, in spite of the rhetoric about equity and access, is starting the process of dismantling this program come Monday. There's the transitional year program, and there's the academic bridging program. So I'm surprised that people don't know about it. It's been around 40 years. The other thing is the political process. I'm going to wrap up. Where you don't have to have an education to become involved in the political process. In the 1990s, when Mike Harris was elected, there were white women who became involved as activist parents because their children's education was being affected. Today, several of those women are in elected government positions. One of them is our Minister of Education, Kathleen Wynne. I remember when Kathleen Wynne was an activist parent with many of us who were parents at the Toronto District School Board. Shelley Carroll, who I understand will be running for mayor of Toronto, was one of those activist parents. From the 1990s to now, several of these women are in elected political positions. So that's just to tell you how white skin privilege is what affects who is elected to government positions in this country.
So now that we had this discussion and everything, we've had this nice, warm, tight-knit, bongo drum cycle, right? What are we going to do from here? Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure you're going to leave here now, you're going to talk to the big wigs, and they're going to give us the same bull.
I have no power to move your government. If they want to do something, they'll have my recommendations. You are the one that has the power to move your government. Nobody gonna do it for you.
So how do we bring them in here?
Well then, who is the member of the council? Who is the member of the council in this area?
Perusa.
Have you been to see him? How many of you go to see him at any one time?
Okay, when you call Perusa, he'll give you an automated message.
Sometimes you have to present yourself in a way that you will not be ignored. Now, I'm not saying this is easy. And so and I'm not saying that you're not against great odds. But what I am saying is that you cannot look for somebody outside to do it for you. It won't happen. All I can do is write a report. Now, when you get the report, you might want to think of creative ways to take this report to, your member of the council, your provincial parliament, and say, look at what the UN has said. Aren't you embarrassed? But that's unfortunately all I have to offer.
It was very encouraging to see so many youth speaking up. It's amazing because usually when people, whether they're youth or not, live in, racialized skins, they do not have the opportunity to voice their opinion to a body as high as the United Nations. So I'm really encouraged that so many people, youth, came out this Saturday morning, or is it afternoon? Afternoon now, to voice their opinions and to make sure that their lived realities will be reflected in this report.
No, but honestly, what I've seen from this was Alvin Curling and Roy McMurtry, the Honorable, both of them are honorable doctors, I believe. They just did the Youth of Violence report, and that was a year ago, sanctioned by Dalton McGuinty, the great premier, and nothing has been done. So it's for us to keep challenging them and say, okay, now that the report is done, what to do? But before the year has even transpired fully, here you are with the United Nations, they're conducting their own report. So I think it's a place where we should all come together now, we should assess all the reports that have been done and challenge the powers that be that say that, you know what, you've got the results you want, you spent the money on these reports, now let's mobilize the community and make that difference.
So that's the Roots to Youth Violence, that's the Faulkner Report, that's even the Stephen Lewis Report 20 years ago. Like,
there have been so many reports. We have been reported, we have been studied to death, and nothing has been done. All these reports sit on the shelves. There have been so many reports. I cannot even begin to tell you how many people I have been interviewed by who have done the. I remember a woman came to me, she wanted to find out about the Negana program, which was an African-centered secondary program, and it seems to have disappeared. And I'm waiting for this woman to get back to me, and not a word. And this is the kind of thing that happens. But what I'm really encouraged about is that there will be a report written by the United Nations expert on minority issues, which will be available to us so that we can use it to, I hope, do more than shame the government, to push them into addressing the issues that have been brought up here.
What did you think about today's roundtable discussion?
I think it's going to be the same thing. You make your opinions, you make your points, and after that it's going to be the round and round circle again. Like I said, it's a tight-knit bongo drum. I love it. We're all beating the bongos. We're all getting together. But after this, where's it going to go? Right? So I challenged her. She challenged me back. Where are we going to take it from here? We'll see.
All right. So the challenge that was put forward to you, what do you think you can do?
I think I can get more involved. Doing talks like this, joining any political group I could be part of, and just harassing anybody that wants to listen. And if they don't want to listen, I'll make them listen. And that's pretty much all I could do.
What did you think about today's roundtable discussion?
What I thought about today, like, I think this is a really important reunion that we have to have in order to get our voices heard, especially about the issues that are happening right now. It's just, you know, the worry about this is where it ends. You know, you have what you have to say and that's it. It doesn't go anywhere from here. So basically we're here, we get our voices heard, and we're waiting for the change that we really need urgently. You know, because people don't come here and assume these things. No, we come here with our stories to share, and this is what needs to be heard, not what people assume our stories.